This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Every year, Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma releases his Waste Book, a collection of what he views as the most egregious wastes of government money. And every year, a number of scientific studies make the list. This year's report, for example, included a study that taught synchronized swimming to sea monkeys, another that massaged rabbits, and one that put mountain lions on treadmills. Sound crazy? Well, maybe. To most of us, science doesn't make sense. It is not obvious until you get the big picture. And for politicians, complexity is very convenient. They can have it both ways. On the one hand, they can, for example, dismiss taking a stand on global warming by saying, "We're not scientists." On the other hand, some are all too happy to become instant scientists by dismissing the value of work they wish not to understand. So we wanted to get the real story on some of these studies under attack with the help of the folks who did the studies, because there's a lot more to this research than you read in the headlines or in the Waste Book, for that matter. Terry Williams is a professor of biology at the University of California, Santa Cruz. She's one of the lead investigators on that mountain lion project. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Williams.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
You're welcome. Will White is an assistant professor in the Department of Biology and Marine Biology at the University of North Carolina in Wilmington. He didn't make it into the Waste Book. Try again next time. But his research has been attacked as wasteful spending by CNS News. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. White.
Thank you, Ira. It's good to be here.
Just a note that Senator Coburn and House Science Committee Chairman Lamar Smith were invited but declined to join us today. Let me begin with you, Terry Williams. Your work made it into the Waste Book. Tell us your side of that story and what the purpose of the mountain lion treadmill was.
Actually, the study really wasn't about mountain lions per se. It was to develop a new wildlife collar for conservation in any large predatory mammal. And so what we were trying to do was combine GPSs with accelerometers and magnetometers, and we could suddenly monitor the movements and behavior and energetics and predict when and where a predator might attack. And so you can imagine if you have collared animals, you now have a really powerful high-tech way to prevent human-animal conflicts with the overall goal of saving lives in our pets and livestock and even those wild animals. So that's what the purpose of the study was.
So you don't view it as wasteful money in any sense?
Not even close, I'm afraid. I've been in this business for a long time trying to conserve large mammals in the environment, and this was pretty hurtful, to be quite honest.
Dr. White, you experienced an attempted hit job on your work by the site CNS News. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, so our work is about sex-changing fish. It turns out that a lot of species of fish, including a lot of ones that we like to eat, like groupers, begin their life as females, and then at some point in their life they change sex to male. And you can imagine how fishing, which usually removes the older and larger fish from a population first, is going to affect these species by not just changing the number of fish in the population, but actually changing the sex ratio. And that can affect the reproduction and impair the sustainability of those types of fisheries. And surprisingly, we know very little about how that works.
Mm-hmm. And so what happened with CNSnews.com?
Yeah, so that's the funny thing is that before we even started the project, I got an email one afternoon right after we got the grant award from the National Science Foundation telling us the email just asked, well, you know, you've gotten this grant from the NSF. Can you please explain how this is a good use of taxpayer dollars? And it was from this editor at CNS News. I'd never heard of CNS News before, but if you go on their website, you can see there's a whole series of stories, each one focusing on a particular federal grant. And they all follow the same template. The story says this is a grant about sex or homosexuality or drugs or some other sort of, you know, vaguely titillating title. And The stories are always very brief, but they always end with this line about how we contacted the investigator to ask them to defend their research and explain how it was a good use of taxpayer funds, and they didn't respond. And I think the reason these people don't respond is because when you get the email, they give you about 3 hours to write back and give your side of the story before they publish the article. So I didn't want to be one of these people who didn't respond, so I wrote back a lengthy article defending the work and explaining why it was important. And I figured that was the end of it, because what's the point in writing one of these articles if you can't include the line at the end that sort of implies that the scientist isn't able to defend their work? So I was pretty surprised the next week when an article came out on CNS News all about how the federal government was spending $700,000 on sex-changing fish. And the article followed the same template. It had, a description of our project, and then in place of the sentence about how I wasn't able to respond, they just basically reprinted my email verbatim, which is sort of odd for science journalism, to just have an opportunity to have your entire description of your work just right there without any editing. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a funny attack because in this case it was intended to be negative. The article as written is actually quite positive on its face, but it clearly fits into this pattern that this website is trying to establish, that there's this narrative of many, many projects funded by the government that are all about sex or some other sort of unworthy or lascivious topic, and we're just throwing money down the drain on these things.
Yeah. Do you think, let me ask both of you, do you think when you get a chance to actually explain your side of the story that it changes the congressman's mind or the website's mind? Terry, what do you think?
You know, I tried to write an op-ed, and it was in L.A. Times, and it was to, say what our study was about and how it focused on conservation. And the response from the public was actually quite positive, but that was only the people that read that op-ed piece. The problem is that, we had sort of a crucifixion in cyberspace when the Waste Book came out, and it's the angry public that are furious at NSF, UCSC, myself personally, for doing this study. And mm-hmm. and the truth is, the money that was mentioned was never really connected to Mountlines on treadmills. So, I think that it spins out of control, but that's the purpose of putting out things like Wastebook or the CNS report.
I'd like to turn now to one of those studies I mentioned earlier, and that is the synchronized swimming in sea monkeys. We asked the lead researcher on that project for the real story of his work.
My name is John DeBeery. I'm a professor of aeronautics and bioengineering at Caltech. The big picture in this research is trying to better understand climate change, and in particular the role that the ocean plays in those physics. Now, we know that the winds and the tides, for example, play an important role in maintaining ocean circulation, and over the past 10 or so years, there have been recent hypotheses that swimming animals might also play a role. Now, the hard part about trying to study animals in the ocean is that it's typically quite expensive to get the ship time needed to search for them, on the order of $10,000 to $20,000 a day. And so in our research, what we did was to use lasers to simulate the processes that occur in the ocean in a laboratory setting, so we could study the science at a much lower cost. I mean, I think it's important for all of us as taxpayers to make sure that our money's going to good use, and this is a way that we were able to use some clever physics to trick the animals to exhibit behaviors in the laboratory that normally you would only find in the ocean. There's a double-edged sword to trying to make science more accessible. I think it's important that people understand what we're doing in our laboratories, that it's not this ivory tower endeavor. At the same time, I think in some cases you find these caricatures that arise in the process of trying to explain something like how you would use lasers to simulate the swimming of plankton in the ocean. And so once those caricatures arise, then it becomes easy to use those for other objectives.
Professor John DeBeery of Caltech. Terry, do you feel frustrated about communicating the value of science? You know you need to do it, and then suddenly gets put into a Vegematic like this?
it actually was amazing. If you go to the back of Wastebook, you can see exactly how this all happened. And people say, why me? Why sea monkeys? Why rabbit massages? Part of it is just timing. We had a paper come out on the mountain lion study in early October, and it wasn't until October 16th that the Wastebook folks actually even looked at the abstract for our study. And then 5 days later, they came out with a headline saying, and in a press release for Wastebook, saying, my gosh, these people have wasted all this money. There's no way they can understand 10 years of science in less than 5 days. And the same thing happened to the sea monkeys, same thing with rabbits, and I'm sure many others. Sad truth, those headline studies by NSF or funded by NSF and NIH were about $1.6 million in funding for $25 billion of wasted federal dollars in that waste book. And I did the math, and it's like 0.008% of the money that we're talking about, and yet we're the headline and the bad guys.
Yeah. Will White, you know, there's a long tradition of partisan attacks on science, of course. Your PhD advisor was actually awarded a Golden Fleece Award by Senator William Proxmire for sex-changing fish way back in 1978.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, right before I was born.
So this has just come full circle for you. Will, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks very much.
I would like to bring on another guest now who's fighting for more federal funding for science, especially space science. Congressman Adam Schiff represents California's 28th Congressional District. And if you're wondering, yes, that does include the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He's also a member of the House Appropriations Committee and two subcommittees that focus on science funding and foreign assistance. He joins us from Washington. Welcome to Science Friday, Representative Schiff.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
What is your take? You've been listening along with us. What is your take on Congress attacking science? Is this going to get any worse in the next Congress?
It's probably going to get worse, and it is very disturbing. And I think it also ought to prompt us to ask, you know, why science? Obviously, there are a lot of different ways to attack the federal government, and there are always expenditures that people can take issue with. You know, most notorious are, you know, the $500 hammers and the $2,000 toilet seats and all those kind of things. But why this now focus on science? Why try to discredit the science agencies and scientists in general? And I have to think it's related to the broader fight on things like climate change. There's an interest in just discrediting science generally because certain issues like climate change don't fit into either the industrial interests that are at stake or into people's broader conceptions of things. But I think there has to be more behind it than simply this is the latest vogue in attacks on government funding.
Do you think that it doesn't matter what scientists say or respond to it? If Congress doesn't like what you're doing, they're going to find a reason to get rid of it.
Well, they're certainly going to find a reason to question it and to challenge it. But I do think it does matter what kind of a rebuttal is made. And I'm glad these scientists are getting out there and writing op-eds and speaking and pushing back. It's really, I think, absolutely vital that this be exposed for what it is, and that is just a cheap shot most of the time, an effort to discredit without really doing much homework, either to grab a headline or in a broader interest of discrediting science more generally.
Terry, you've been targeted by the House Science Committee Chairman Lamar Smith in his campaign against the National Science Foundation. Do you feel threatened by any of this, like your research is in jeopardy? Have people been advising you what to do?
You know, yes and no. At one level, belonging to scientific societies, so American Physiological Society, FASEB, AAAS, and the rest, they've really come to guard my back a little bit, and I appreciate that, and people should know that. In terms of being threatened myself, shoot, man, I'm too old and grizzled for that, so I'm not too worried. I've got worse from reviewers of my papers and grants. But I do wonder about the up-and-coming scientists. You know, they see this and they go, why in the world would I want to go into science and basically get kicked around? You know, and I worry about female scientists. I don't think, you know, Smith or Coburn have a clue I'm female just because of my name. And you know, overall, trying to mentor female scientists over the last 20, 30 years, there's a lack of confidence there, and that really disturbs me. If one creative scientist is stopped as a result of this, I think that would be a travesty. And you know, and let's face it, science is a business of exploration and discovery and innovation, and that's what the U.S. economy is built on. So it astounds me that we're being attacked. And when you think about it, our founding fathers were some scientists and inventors. Look at Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
So I don't get it. I really don't understand.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Congressman Schiff, you've got some additional money in the budget, right, for space exploration, especially you've championed a mission to Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter.
Absolutely, and this has been one of the good news stories. Just to, you know, I guess transition between the two, You know, one of the concerns I have about this attack on science is not only the impact on the current scientists who are the victims of these attacks, but also the way it may chill further scientific research. If you have a project that is outside the box, and those are often the best scientific inquiries, you're going to be discouraged, and you're going to think, okay, how can someone package this in a way that discredits it? Should I pursue some other research project that's less easy to mock, even though the potential science here is all the much greater? So I am concerned about the chilling impact also. But in terms of good news stories, planetary science is one of the really good news stories, and it's a bipartisan story. One of my closest friends and colleagues, John Culberson, Republican of Texas, he and I have teamed up together to make sure we have a healthy investment in planetary science, that we undertake new exciting missions like a mission to Europa. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good news story. We have helped to replace a lot of the funding for planetary science, and that's all good.
Mm-hmm. One last question to you, Terry. Do you think scientists should push back?
Absolutely. I actually was surprised that it hasn't happened a lot before this. Maybe people were just scared. But I will add one good news thing, and that is, I just came back from a whole series of expeditions from studying narwhals above the Arctic Circle and giant river otters in Peru, Weddell seals in the Antarctic. And I have to tell you, we do live on an extraordinary planet of biodiversity. And golly, I'm going to do everything I can to preserve it through science.
And Congressman, you think also scientists should push back?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's essential that they push back. And look, there's a lot of good things going on. I mentioned planetary, but, we are close to unlocking some of the most far-reaching questions. Are we alone in the universe? And these exciting new missions, which do enjoy broad bipartisan support, are going forward. But I think that at every level, whether it's at the level of individual grants for new scientists or at the level of the most sophisticated science missions in the universe, the public has to weigh in and underscore its importance. Scientists need to speak up and speak loudly. And if we do, there's a very bright future of exploration ahead of us.
Can I ask you both to stay with us for a few more minutes? We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk lots more with Congressman Adam Schiff, Terry Williams. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking this hour about science funding, partisan attacks on science, with my guest, Congressman Adam Schiff of California's 28th Congressional District, also a member of the House Appropriations Committee, Terry Williams, a professor of biology at the University of California in Santa Cruz. Our number 844-724-8255 is our number. Congressman, how do you make the argument to your colleagues in Congress that strong scientific funding is in the national interest? Or do they really know this in their heart of heart, but the politics gets in the way?
I think it's the latter. I think most of the members of Congress on both sides of the aisle recognize the imperative of science funding and research and development. We're in a very globalized environment now economically. We're not going to compete with the third world on wages, and the only way we can compete and win is if we're the most inventive and productive, and you can't do that without good science. So I think members understand that, but many cannot resist the headline and the political attack and the opportunity to discredit some of the agencies, or in the case of climate change, the science itself. But in terms of science as a driver of innovation, I would hope that there's no one we have to make that argument with anymore, that's an argument that's already been overwhelmingly made.
Let's go to the phones, 844-724-8255. Cape Cod, Sean, welcome to Science Friday.
All right. Thank you for having me. Interesting conversation. Love the program. So I didn't hear all of it, but I understand, and I'm also concerned about it seems to be sort of a political attacks, motivated attacks against science and defunding. But I also wonder, I'd be interested to hear some response to, for example, I know that some of the blowback with science is about climate change and certain economic interests who feel like that's a threat to their economic interests. But I also think that there's probably a lot of constituents out there. Like recently I saw a poll that said, the reason why a number of people weren't really that concerned about climate change was because of the apocalypse. And I know that sounds a little crazy, but I do think that to the extent that for a lot of people, you know, some of the most popular scientific endeavors, whether it's the Human Genome Project, artificial intelligence, or the Richard Dawkins of the world going out and making it a point to basically say, you know, there's no God, we're hostile to religion, there's nothing special about us, we're not in a special part of the universe, we're just this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that it sort of sets up this existential crisis for a lot of people, because to the extent that they feel like their worldview of what they derive meaning from is under attack, and they associate that with science, I think that actually has something to do with some of the political pushback as well. And I'm just wondering, I'll take the comment off air, but I was just wondering, or I'd love to hear some of your guests, you know, comment about that.
All right. Thanks for calling. Terry Williams, what have you got to say?
Wow, that is really depressing. I guess I just don't see that, and maybe it's because of the disconnect between most humans now and nature. And I'd say maybe they need to get out just a little bit more and see what this planet is about. The attack on climate change, you know, that's going to go on for a long time. The thing I don't understand is why, when a scientist speaks, and the one thing we speak is the truth. That's what we're trained to do. That's what statistics are about. That's where we're at. And why that doesn't hold any weight. Why a belief, as opposed to the truth, are in conflict right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in the game of just trying to believe things away. We're telling you the absolute truth, and the politics have gotten in there to build on people's emotions and people's beliefs, and I think that it's created a real problem for the scientists.
Congressman Schiff, any reaction?
Well, I think it's less about a collision between religion and science, for example, and more driven by a desire to just broadly attack the government. It's been a recurrent theme for many years now, any way to discredit the government, what it's capable of, what it's spending taxpayer dollars on. Because the more distrust you can generate in government, the more it helps certain factions within the Congress, and the more it helps you essentially defund the Congress. So I think that that's perhaps a bigger driver than any broader philosophical differences. What's interesting to me is every so many years there's a new culprit that gets chosen. I'm not sure how consciously. It used to be the NEA, if you remember those debates, over the arts and public funding of the arts. And for a long time it was legal services for poor people. And lately it seems to be science. And I'm not sure why science has earned this moment in the sun, as it were, but I think it is part of a broader effort to discredit government and also discredit some of the major scientific issues that run contrary to their political interests.
Congressman Schiff, California's 28th District, Terry Williams, Professor of Biology, UC Santa Cruz. Thank you both for taking time to be with us, and happy holidays to both of you.
To you,
too. Thank you very much.